The Tom Woods Show, episode 1819.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, social media is a pit of misinformation when it comes to the subject of guns. So what you need is my free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Guns. Smashes all the myths and a lot of fun to read. Pick it up at wrongaboutguns.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm very glad today to be highlighting a new project, a new website that I think you guys are going to want to support. And it's Thick Red Line. You'll find it at thickredline.org. And the purpose of it is to make explicit the connection between police abuse and victimless crime laws. You would think this connection would be obvious to people, but as we saw in 2020, it's really not. And yet, it seems clear to me that the more things are criminalized, the more police abuse you're going to get. So we're going to talk today with the founders of Thick Red Line, Howard Lichtman and Matt White. All right, gentlemen, let's jump right into it. Let's start off by having one of you guys just describe for us very basically what the Thick Red Line project is all about.
Sure, Tom. This is Howard. I'll go first. And so the Thick Red Line really came out of civil disobedience around the lockdowns when we realized that police officers, sheriff deputies really didn't want to be going along with lockdowns, mask mandates, and things that, you know, bankrupting local businesses. And they would say, hey, you know, what do we, you know, we don't want to be closing these parks. We don't want to be closing these beaches. We don't want to be closing these things. What are we supposed to do? And I had a little bit of an epiphany. And the epiphany was because I'd watched officers get fired if they stood up one at a time, that really they were going to have to take a collective stance and draw a thick red line in the sand, lock arms and say, we're not willing to use violence on peaceful people. We're not going to do victimless crimes as a department. And then that would give them the security of not being able to, you know, lose their jobs and their pensions.
Now that's very interesting. So although I looked at your site, I didn't know that that was the origin of it. Because what I had thought of was, of course, over the summer when the issue of the police was much more front and center and people were very unhappy because of George Floyd, a lot of us in the libertarian world were trying to say as gently as possible that a lot of this problem could be resolved if we didn't have the police doing 73 things they shouldn't be doing in the first place. That if the state is going to outlaw a million different victimless things, somebody's got to do the enforcing of that. And the enforcing of that is bound to be, to put it mildly, clunky and bull in a china shop in a lot of cases. So we have to get to the root. You know, a lot of people talk about we've got to get to the root causes of crime. I think we have to also get to the root causes of the problems with law enforcement. One of them is they're trying to enforce too many darn things.
And not just too many things, but things that are patently not crimes. And so, right. You know, whether it's lockdowns, whether it's mask mandates, whether it's drug war, or whether it's, you know, gambling or seatbelt laws, you know, we're encouraging these guys to draw a thick red line in the sand. But if you're going to draw a thick red line, then where are you going to draw it? And so what we're saying is it's obviously it can't be politician law, because if you choose politician law, then you get sundowner laws and fugitive slave laws and Jim Crow laws in Nazi Germany. So if you're going to draw that line, we're educating and encouraging the police to draw it at no victim, no crime, the natural law tradition, 1,000-year, you know, history across multiple civilizations. And in natural law, there's, you know, 5 main offenses. There's murder, rape, assault, theft, and trespass. And all of those are obviously wrong. And they're obviously wrong because there's a victim. And if there's not a victim, then it's your common law right to do anything you want as long as you're not harming anybody else. And so we've been really suggesting that if you're going to draw a thick red line in the sand, that's where it's got to be. No victim, no crime. And then that gets rid of all of the mischief that politicians can get the police into.
Well, at the outset, can we deal with the objection that you hear from a lot of people that if you're talking about drug use, for example, that it's obtuse of us to say there are no victims because the families suffer and there are all sorts of collateral damages that occur from drug addiction. And so there are victims and we're just refusing to acknowledge that. Is this just a matter of how we define what constitutes a victim?
Definitely. I mean, so a real victim is somebody that has been hurt, and it's interesting that the government doesn't say that the family is the victim. The government says that they're the victim, or society yes. is the victim. And so our argument would be that government can't be a victim because government is just an entity, an idea. And unless you have a real victim that has really been, you know, wronged that you can face in court, then it's not really a crime.
Matt, do you want to jump in on this before I go on?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I'll echo what Howard said, but really what this boils down to is what we've seen, especially since the spring with the pandemic upon us, is we're seeing increasingly draconian measures that the police are asked to enforce. Now, I doubt that very many of these law enforcement officers, when they signed up, thought they would be closing down their neighbor's business or thought they would be forcing someone to wear a mask or eventually even take a forced vaccine to be able to exercise basic fundamental rights. We're talking about freedom of association, freedom of travel, freedom of speech. And I think that this is causing people who have for a very long time ignored the encroachments on these fundamental civil liberties to finally wake up and kind of say, there is something very wrong in our system and we need to do something about it. And a lot of these folks are good, hardworking, taxpaying, the engine of a free society. They are America. And these folks are finally saying, I have to do something, but they don't have a tradition of speaking out. And now they're learning that they have to. And what we say is it's very hard to actuate a police state if the police won't participate. And what we're doing is we're actually working with several communities already and more coming in all the time. We've had an incredible response. And we're meeting with these folks and we're explaining, A, the very principle of this. And what this boils down to is a very simple idea. It is live and let live, do unto others, and no victim, no crime. And if we can show people that are questioning things, and what we really find in the people who've reached out to us is they say, my goodness, you know, we have a sheriff who has said something that he's not going to enforce these laws. You should talk to our sheriff. And we say, no, let us help you talk to your sheriff. Luckily, in this country, our sheriffs are directly responsible to the people. And most folks don't understand if they watch Hollywood that the supreme law enforcement officer in any county is the county sheriff held directly accountable through the ballot box. Now, it's not the federal agent who comes sailing in the Hollywood movie. It's not the state agency. It's that sheriff, and he's responsible directly to you. That's a real opportunity to have some real change here. So what we're doing is we're helping people organize locally into groups that when the sheriff says, I'm not going to do this, they can stand up with him. Fill the community council meetings, whatever your form of government, go to the mayor, go to the county executives and say, look, our sheriff is standing on the fundamental principles of a free society and we're going to stand with him. And Thick Red Line is there to help them do that. That's what we're doing.
Thick Red Line obviously is a development of the Thin Blue Line. Where does Thick Red Line come from?
Thick Red Line was Howard's epiphany when he was in California and was engaging in this in Sacramento. And he saw from kind of a high perspective that these police officers on their faces were not interested in being part of this. And as things progressed, he was able to have individual conversations. And we started talking about this idea as early as May of this year. And we spent a lot of time on the philosophy. And what we really said was, if we're going to be successful and help these communities, it has to be nonpartisan. We have to be very careful to make sure that people understand this is not about right and left. This is about freedom and slavery. This is about the fundamental rights of successful societies back through the Magna Carta, back to jury trials that we've had through English common law, to the Declaration of Independence, to where we are today with a constitution that is all but tattered. But the fundamental ideas behind the founding are there and they are timeless and they go across religions and philosophies in every successful society in human history. And that is live and let live, do unto others, and no victim, no crime.
And I'll just add, you know, so the police, you know, claim that the thin blue line separates barbarity from civilization. And what we're suggesting is that the most important line is the thick red line that they draw in the sand and say, we're not willing to cross this line into tyranny. And tyranny really is going against natural law and using violence on peaceful people to either, you know, try and do social engineering, you know, get rid of gambling and get rid of, you know, plants that we don't like, or to raise revenue on what Sheriff Mack, who is a member of our board of advisors, calls taxation through citation. And so what we're doing is, you know, obviously it can't be on politician law. So where is the officer supposed to draw the line? We're educating them on natural law. And we're suggesting that if you draw it at no victim, no crime, then that's the logical place. That's the moral place to draw it. And so that's the, you know, the basics. If we can just get our sheriffs and our police to agree never to use violence on peaceful people, then that makes a whole bunch of, you know, of these social engineering or taxation through citation schemes go away.
I think what Howard is trying to get to here is that what we see with both the defund movement and even with the thin blue line, the fundamentals sometimes behind these are about division. And even in law enforcement training, as we've seen law enforcement become more and more militarized, we see the fusion centers popping up that link, you know, not only federal militaristic equipment, but federal assets to local law enforcement, almost as a national police force. We see folks, you know, understanding that causing officers to be afraid of their friends and neighbors and their family and the public is not productive. And that part of the thin blue line is something that needs to be addressed. And I think we address that by these local police officers are family members, they're friends, they go to our churches, and they can be talked to about these fundamental things. And what they need is the support, because a lot of these guys, when they pop their head up, they take the risk of being fired. Especially if they're in an administrative situation. Sheriffs are very fortunate they're elected officials. But if you're a police chief and you work for a city council, your job is very much in jeopardy and it's not subject to the ballot box. It's very difficult for them to stand up to this, and we're trying to help with that.
It's interesting you mention Sheriff Mack, because of course he has an organization, the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, where I've spoken before, and he has tried to make sure that sheriffs understand the role that they can play in precisely the kinds of situations you're describing. I don't think he's gone to the extreme of saying that the sheriff should refuse to use force against any peaceful person and that all victimless crimes should be, in effect, unenforced. But he is saying that the sheriff has the power to make important decisions. And as we've seen during COVID, there are sheriffs who have said, we're not going to go beating down people's doors to see if they have more than 10 people at their Christmas dinner. We're not going to do the following things. That's been very encouraging. But I don't, and maybe I'm wrong about this, I haven't so far heard sheriffs saying, we're going to stop pursuing the drug war. We're going to stop asset forfeiture related to the drug war. I haven't heard that. Is that where you guys come? Are you trying to encourage sheriffs? Are you trying to encourage individual police officers? What's the strategy?
I think that really we have to look at the principle. And this is very hard for people to embrace. And it doesn't need to be embraced in total at once. But you do have to think and understand this. So what did we know about prohibition? At the time, in the 20s, the American people still understood that at least we had to change the Constitution to do that. And what did prohibition of alcohol cause? It caused Al Capone's, okay? So we repealed prohibition. Now we've had the drug war for how long now? And it's essentially prohibition. And it has brought the prison industrial complex, and it has brought the criminality around drugs. So yes, as it's abhorrent, I'll echo Ron Paul on this. It's not advocating that people use drugs or that's a good lifestyle. But if you want to accept freedom, you have to tolerate the fact that people are still free to make very bad decisions with their lives. And that is the principle. And it's the same principle that you can easily accept when you say, should the government be able to force me to wear a seatbelt? It's a darn good idea. I advocate doing it, but I don't think I have any right to initially cite someone. And if they don't pay the citation, take them to court. And if they refuse there, put them in jail because they chose to make a personally questionable decision riding in their car. It's the same principle of, is somebody going to use heroin? Well, why do we have the criminality of the drug war around that in a prison industrial complex that capitalizes on that? And at a certain time, as laws are piled on and piled on our country with more and more draconian things, that your job is non-essential, that your business is non-essential, at some point we have to talk about the principles of freedom.
All right. Now, having said that, let's speak very frankly about an individual police officer. Now, obviously, if I work under a sheriff who's totally on board with me with regard to state overreach into people's lives, then it's a lot easier for me to live my life as a police officer because I know he's got my back and he's not going to be hounding me or persecuting me. But if there's a sheriff who, is not really on board for that, is there still a way as a police officer that I can kind of carry this out and maybe, frankly, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but maybe surreptitiously. I mean, obviously a police officer, as a practical matter on the ground, has a tremendous amount of discretion as to whether he pursues something or not.
Exactly.
Or what winds up happening. Is that what you're recommending, that as a matter of conscience, or that the police officer has to declare to the world, this is my philosophy, because maybe he'll get fired?
No, absolutely, Tom. And Howard, I'm going to let you take this because we're really reclaiming the idea of the sheepdog. Go ahead, Howard.
So what we're looking for is we're looking for officers that are sheepdogs, and for people in your audience, you know, most people, you know, and it's not a negative, I'm not saying a negative thing, but most people, they don't have a capacity for violence. They're just good, productive people. And they, you know, they're just the sheep. They're not into looking for fights or anything like that. And then there is the wolf, and the wolf is someone that has a capacity for violence, but no empathy, no morality. And they're willing to feed off the sheep, whether that's, you know, a wolf in a, you know, a common street thug, or, a person in government willing to use government's power to feed off the population. And then there is the sheepdog, and the sheepdog is someone that has a capacity for violence, but would never, ever harm the sheep. And in fact, would only use that violence to defend flock. And so we're really looking for officers that are sheepdogs. And some of those, we already know that there are officers within certain departments that are thick red line and principle and are using their discretion to not persecute victimless crimes when they have the ability not to do that. What we're looking for is, ideally, it's the sheriff would lead by example. And our thesis is that the overwhelming majority of sheriffs and police chiefs are good people. But because we know that, you know, there are bad apples out there, and there are sheriffs that are personally benefiting from the drug war, or sheriffs that may be personally benefiting from, you know, the scam where they get to keep some of the money from the food budget in the jail, so they feed the prisoners bologna and, you know, white bread every single meal so that they can take that thing. So because we know there are bad sheriffs out there, it is available to the rank and file deputies, the rank and file officers, to get together, to organize collectively and say, hey, we're drawing a thick red line. We're not going to do this as deputies. And if a dozen or two dozen or 100 deputies in a department step forward, that's the security that they can't all be fired. They can't all lose their pension. And especially if they're supported by the community. And so what Thick Red Line's all about is it's the people supporting the police to say no to politicians. And if they do it together collectively, supported by the community, there's really nothing the politicians can do, or a bad sheriff or a bad police chief can do, to force a dozen or two dozen or 100 plus deputies, you know, to go out there and raise revenue on their friends and neighbors. Because if they're united and supported by the community, it's game over.
Folks, let's take a break to thank a sponsor I love deeply, and that is Skillshare. Here's an online learning community with thousands and thousands of classes that can help you broaden your horizons, learn something new, or take a deeper dive into something creative you love already. Everything from illustration, design, photography, animation, and productivity, to marketing, freelancing, entrepreneurship, and more. These are short classes that get right to the point. They're not 13 weeks with 8 modules and 12 projects and whatever that you'll never be able to do. You get a real sense of accomplishment when you complete one, and you will have been exposed to something you had not tried before, or you will have gotten better at something you already love. Now, I'm a nerd, so I recently took Introduction to SEO, Tactics and Strategy for Entrepreneurs by Rand Fishkin, because the way the search engines rank you changes all the time, and you have to be on top of that. And I certainly don't want to be invisible in the searches. And in promoting Skillshare, you may recall I have featured 3 of my own daughters who have used and loved Skillshare when it comes to things like fiction writing and art. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods and get a free trial of premium membership. That's a free trial of Skillshare premium membership at Skillshare.com/woods. On your website, you have some resources people can use if they want to promote the kinds of ideas you believe in. So you have handbooks, cards for cops. You have a thing, how to redline your police/sheriff's department. Can you talk about some of that?
Certainly. What we're doing is that's outreach, Tom, and we're getting that in the hands of people so they can begin to get the ideas. And what we see is this. We're getting these contacts from all over the country and actually in 8 countries now. We have an organization in the Netherlands that's translating Thick Red Line into Dutch. And they're all very interested in how to move this forward. And like we said, a lot of these folks have never organized before. So we're getting these materials out. So they bring them to, first it's family and friends, then sometimes it's local community groups. And they get a few people together, hopefully some off-duty police officers who talk about this and how it fits in their community. And then what we're offering is the ability to get with these folks in a meeting and actually help them try to organize this. So where we have sheriffs that are already standing up, and we've identified over 130 around the country who have publicly said at some level that they're not willing to support these types of ideas on encroachment of liberties, is to identify who the key community leaders are, identify business owners and religious and civic groups, Lions Clubs, JCs, that local folks who have been involved, the people who have traditionally stood up when their neighbors are sick or injured or hurt or in trouble, the people in the community that drive communities and say, look, we can talk about this principle here and you can be the people that go when, say, a governor in a certain state creates an executive order that is obviously contrary to freedom, and you can help your sheriff stand up, because if he's standing there all alone, it is very likely that higher up officials, state or federal, can bring in lawyers and federal agents or state agents to try to counter the sheriff's authority in some of this stuff. But if the local community is supporting him, that's where they have the real opportunity.
What's the first most important thing you would want the average person to do after listening to this conversation? What's the first step they should take?
I think the first step
to make a better world, basically.
Yeah, I think the first step they should take is go to thickredline.org. And there they can either download our handbook for free that, you know, kind of gives an overview of how to thick red line your department or your sheriff's office. They should educate themselves on the benefits of going thick red line. You know, this is not something that not just ends the violence, but it saves taxpayers billions of dollars. It focuses the police on real crime with real victims. It breaks the backs of drug cartels. There's just an amazing amount of benefits, and just kind of just understanding the scope of how much your community could benefit by your department going thick red line will help. And then take a look through our website and you'll find resources that you can use in your own community, whether it's the, you know, hard copies of our handbooks or our cards for cops. Or we have a planning call for those that want to become what we call kind of community ambassadors. We can help with every aspect of getting, you know, your local organization set up, from the IT support to, you know, PR and marketing support. And we have a planning call that is in our web store that can help with that. And we have free orientations every 2 weeks where anybody that is interested in becoming a community ambassador, or if you're a law enforcement officer that's interested in helping your department go thick red line, you can sign up for one of our free orientation calls, and we'll take you through how to be successful in meeting with your sheriff, how to, you know, bring the local media, you know, on board with you, you know, how to introduce this to your community in a really impactful way. And we're looking for those spark plugs that are out there that you know, have the gravitas to be able to organize their community and have the ability to, you know, to meet with the sheriff. There's a lot of times we're already working with local organizations where there's already a freedom movement in a particular city or community. And we're brought in, we're walked into meetings with sheriffs arm in arm with local community organizations. So we're looking for that because that's the best. And then a lot of times people will get meetings with sheriffs. They'll, you know, in-person meetings with sheriffs, and they'll just bring us in over a conference call, throw their phone on the table and just bring us in on speakerphone. And there's a lot of ways that, you know, individuals can help move this along. And then the final thing I'd say is we're looking for those sheriffs. We're looking for heroes. We're looking for the first couple of sheriffs that, you know, have the gravitas and the, you know, to take the stand and explain the moral position to other of their brethren in law enforcement.
Obviously, there's education that needs to be done all around here of officers, sheriffs, and the general public. And what I want to know is I don't know if we can quantify it, but where you think the most education needs to take place, because I have heard people be genuinely outraged about police and yet not at all focus on the problem of victimless crimes. And yet if you didn't have all these victimless crime laws on the books, the police would not be bothering you 90% of the time. Yep. And yet to me, this is the most obvious fact of the whole thing. It doesn't even matter if I have a good guy or a bad guy as a policeman. If there's nothing for him to enforce, then he never bothers me in the first place. And I'm shocked at how few people make that connection. So are you finding that also, or is there a light bulb going on?
Well, Tom, what we say is it's very hard for a centralized government to enforce a police state if the police will not cooperate. And this battle for freedom starts right in our local communities, because these aren't outside troops. They're not foreign nationals. They're not nebulous terrorists. This is our opportunity. These are our family and friends for them to say no. And when we start at the local level, this can go up and force centralized governments to understand they cannot print money out of thin air and hand it out to special interests and tax us to death. At some point, this country is going to stand up for the fundamental freedoms that the country was founded on. And they can do that in a nonviolent way by just simply saying no more.
And that education piece, Tom, the main education is getting to the officers and the deputies and letting them know that they have another, you know, option on the table, and that they can say no, and that not only can they say no, it is their moral duty to say no to laws that are repugnant to natural law or to the Constitution. And so a lot of the officers don't understand that they can say no. And so it's really empowering for them to understand that, hey, there's an option on the table that protects their job, protects their pension. And so that's the main education is getting to these officers and letting them know that they have the opportunity to say no, that there's another option on the table. They don't have to raise revenue on their friends and neighbors. They don't have to bankrupt local businesses.
And Tom, I'd like to plug a few other organizations, because there is an awakening, and it's not just around Thick Red Line. There's an organization in Arizona and Hawaii now starting up, and they're the liveandletlive.org, and that's formed by Mark J. Victor.
I just had Mark Victor on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, I spoke with Mark yesterday, and we're talking about how this coincides. We also have had very good communications with IJ.org.
Great.
And the good folks over there. So we're not just organizing the communities. We're also saying that when we have these local people standing up and these sheriffs being supported, now, initially, we expect that where sheriffs already agree with us, it will be the easiest places to do it. But once we've had success there and the word spreads, we assume that other people with sheriffs that are either indifferent or outright contrary to our ideas will also be pressured to at least consider them. Now, one of the big issues is once Thick Red Line has got folks working together and organized with their sheriff, what happens when the really bad actors come in, whether it's state or federal level? They're going to need legal support. And one of our great friends, Ernest Hancock, has a saying, and his saying is that we're going to make them say it. So if they're going to do executive orders and dictates, and they're going to come to a sheriff who's saying, I'm not going to do those, and they say, well, we're going to sue you civilly, we're going to make your life miserable, we're going to try to get you unseated, we're going to investigate you in a million ways, then we want IJ and Mark Victor there to defend them. So that is the tie-in. And if they're going to do that, they're going to have to take it to the state and federal Supreme Courts and say they're going to violate freedom of association and free markets and free speech. They're going to have to say it.
All right, well, then maybe that answers my final question, which was just a thought experiment about imagining a Karen, let's say, who calls the police because, the local dance studio has too many couples dancing in it or some ridiculous thing like this. And a police officer comes out and says, well, I'm not going to do anything about this. And then she doesn't say, I guess you have a different philosophy than I do. I'll go back to... No. She calls the sheriff and reports that police officer.
Yes.
Well, so what happens now?
Well, I'd like to just expand a little bit more on the sheepdog idea. And let's take this in an encounter. Let's say a police officer, and many officers' uniforms have codes where they can and cannot have certain things on their uniform, but they may wear a wristband or a lapel pin that has a sheepdog emblem. Now, if you're someone who knows about Thick Red Line and you get pulled over on the side of the road and you look up at that officer and on his lapel is a nice little sheepdog, you've already de-escalated the situation because people are communicating without saying any words. And that's what we're really excited about with that. Now, as to your question with the Karen, I think there's always going to be, we've had those people in society since Judas, and I just don't know that you're going to solve that. But what we can do with those folks at a higher and higher level is just ignore them.
So just to, to expound on, the other option that the officer has is if they're doing it one at a time, that's when they can be fired. And so really, if they're a Thick Red Line department and all of the other officers have already locked their arms and drawn their Thick Red Line in the sand and said, we're not going to use violence on peaceful people, then that officer can explain to the Karen, hey, our office or our department is united and that we're not doing this, and there's nothing that the sheriff can do to punish an individual employee if all of the officers in the department have said, we're not going to do these things.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate your time today. I'm very much supportive, of course, of what you're doing. I want to encourage people to check out thickredline.org. You're going to like the resources that are there. Of course, you're going to be sympathetic to the whole project, and let's get the word out about it. So thanks again.
Well, thank you, Tom. And we just want to say, we just started this in November. And so anyone who would like to help us, we're rapidly prototyping this. We're expanding fast. And thank you for any support you can lend.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tom. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your audience. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, folks, I hope you'll check out thickredline.org. It seems like a worthy project to me, that's for sure. Let me tell you what's coming up tomorrow, because it's extremely timely. We're having Mark Jeftovic back on the show. You may remember him as the author of the book Unassailable, Protect Yourself from Deplatform Attacks, Cancel Culture, and Other Online Disasters. Well, that's become only more relevant since the last time we spoke, so we're going to get an update from him about what he sees happening around us and what we can do about it. And if you like and appreciate what's going on here on the Tom Woods Show, you are going to love all the goodies I give you as a supporting listener of the show, not least of which is membership in the Tom Woods Show Elite, which is going to keep you sane, keep you informed, wonderful, genial people in there. And I do special events and special unannounced bonuses that you get as a member of that. But the bonuses I give you as a member of that program, it's unbelievable. So check that out at supportinglisteners.com. Right now, go over there, supportinglisteners.com, and Mark Jeftovic tomorrow. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.